Good evening and welcome to African News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiyes Wilhib. Coming up this hour on African News Tonight,
136 people were deported from Lesbos, 66 from Chios. They were mainly from Pakistan and 2 were from Syria, but they were returned voluntarily.
That's Mariana Karakulaki reporting on the relocation of migrants and refugees from Greece to Turkey. Details next.
Also, police in the Republic of Congo's capital exchanged heavy gunfire with unidentified gunmen in the first major outbreak of violence since the re-election of President Denis Sassou Nguesso. And Nigeria's army says it has arrested the leader of the Islamist militant group Ansaru, a faction of Boko Haram.
We'll have these stories and more coming up ahead on African News Tonight. Our top story this hour. About 200 migrants and refugees have been returned from Greece to Turkey today. It's the first group sent back under the new deal between Turkey and the European Union. The deal calls for all migrants who've arrived in Greece after March 20th to be returned to Turkey. In exchange, the EU has agreed to resettle some migrants. It also will give Turkey more money and allow visa-free travel for Turkish citizens. Reporter Mariana Karakulaki is following developments in Greece from the city of Thessaloniki. She spoke to VOA's Jody Kapowa about today's returning migrants and refugees.
136 people were deported from Lesbos, 66 from Chios. They were mainly from Pakistan and 2 were from Syria, but they were returned voluntarily. But the thing is that in the last couple of days, there were more arrivals in the island than the returns. Apart from that, the Turkey Interior Minister said that Turkey is ready to receive 500 people. Greece gave the names of 400 people, but we don't have a clear image of what is going to happen for those that are detained in the island, because there are quite a few thousands already there.
You said Turkey said it would accept 500 people. Is there any word when the rest will be returned?
It's not clear yet. I think they will try to see if anyone will apply for asylum, and then they will decide of the next returns, but it hasn't been announced yet.
How were the migrants returned to Turkey, by ship or by air?
They were returned by ship. The ferries left at 7:30 in the morning. Then they were received in Turkey by buses, and they were taken to a refugee camp 2 hours outside Istanbul.
Now, let me ask you about the new arrivals on the Greek islands. Are they being detained at this time?
Yes, everyone that arrives in Greece now is being detained. They are being considered illegal, so they are being taken to the former hotspots that are now detention centers.
Do you know when they're at these detention centers whether they receive any kind of humanitarian assistance?
The centers are being controlled by the military, Frontex, and other official organizations and the authorities generally. The largest NGOs that were active in the island have left the detention centers because they do not agree with EU-Turkey deal. They consider it as a human rights violation, and they said that they will not be complicit to what the EU is trying to do. So the UNHCR has left, the MSF has left, all the major organizations. And on the other hand, volunteers are not allowed to go in. So every humanitarian help is being theoretically provided by the military and Frontex.
Let me ask you about Idomeni on the Greece-Macedonian border. Reuters is reporting today that the migrants at the border have called the EU-Turkey deal unethical. Have you heard of any new protests or anything like that there?
Yes, there are protests daily, and for the past 2 days, refugees have been blocking the highway that goes from Thessaloniki to Macedonia. They do not allow trucks to enter Macedonia, generally to be on the highway, but they do allow cars and buses and ambulances, for example.
Can you tell me about any other action being taken for the 50,000 or so migrants and refugees that are in Greece waiting to be either registered or resettled?
Yes. Today, one of the spokespersons in Greece announced that they will evacuate the port of Piraeus. It's the second and third announcement for the past couple of days that they will make this evacuation. There are around 3,000 people in the port. In theory, they should be taken to the hotspots that are being built by the military, but these hotspots are not ready, and the living conditions are quite questionable, according to volunteers that are visiting there. On the other hand, the 50,000 that are in Greece, they should apply for asylum either in Greece or for the EU relocation program. If they do not apply for asylum or for relocation, they will be returned to Turkey.
That's reporter Mariana Karakulaki from the city of Thessaloniki. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. In related news, as part of the EU-Turkey deal, the first group of Syrian refugees sent from Turkey have arrived in Europe. The 16 asylum seekers arrived in the northern German city of Hanover today. Another group of 16 is expected later today.
Greece has begun the return of migrants to Turkey under an agreement made with the EU last month. However, the International Organization for Migration, IOM, says other migrants and refugees are now entering Italy by sailing across the Mediterranean from Libya. Last week, over 1,000 West Africans, mostly from Nigeria, arrived on the shores of Italy. Africans from other countries, such as Ethiopia, are expected to attempt the journey in the months ahead. Joel Millman is a spokesperson for the International Organization for Migration. He spoke with me about the current migration patterns from Africa and what IOM anticipates in the coming months.
Sub-Saharan Africans are traveling up through Libya quite a lot, not quite as much on this route, but I think we're going to have to wait and see how things work out. There were last summer quite a number of Sub-Saharan and Horn of Africa Africans coming through this part of the Middle East up into the route, but I'm not so sure that this we're going to see that this year. I think most of the activity is going through Libya.
And once they go through Libya, then they arrive in probably Italy.
Right.
And then what happens to them after that?
What happens to them after that is that they're dispersed. Now, the Italian reception centers, which are all over the country, and quite a lot of them in Sicily, I visited some about a year ago, do have quite a lot of sub-Saharan Africans, especially very young people, lack the contacts with the rest of their family, their tribes, or their national groups in Northern Europe. So they remain in Italy and they attempt the long process of amnesty and asylum and a chance to stay there. In some cases, they're allowed to work informally outside the reception center. They work for farmers quite often. Other times, we've heard of more sinister cases of criminal groups luring people into the drug trade, into prostitution, things like that. So you still see that a lot of that in Italy. And then, of course, you're hearing about migrants more and more finding ways to get on their own, even by walking up into the rest of Europe. Italy shares a lot of borders with countries of the EU and non-EU, but are part of the Schengen group, which allow free passage of borders. So Italy is still a pretty good place to land, but more Africans are likely to stay than other migrants if they get there.
Last week, we reported on a number of migrants, maybe over 1,000 of them coming from Nigeria and crossing over into Italy. I guess they were fleeing the conflict there that was going on in Nigeria. Do you anticipate more of this happening?
Yeah, Nigeria's been extremely busy. The biggest country in Africa, as you know, and its population has been very active in this area, taking this route through the desert. Last year, I witnessed a rescue of 89 migrants near Tunisia, and their boat was taken into Tunisia. I remember there was the majority of the largest single group was Nigerians, and I met a pair of brothers, one of whom had been in Libya for 5 years, and one who had just joined him in Libya in the last couple of weeks. So you see that a lot. You see people that are in Libya washing cars, doing construction work, doing different kinds of off-the-books work. And that was their goal. That's where they wanted to be. And they wanted to make money to send back to their families. But that proved impossible because of the deteriorating security situation in Libya. So they were being joined by family members looking to bypass the job market in Libya and go straight to one of these boats to Europe. But we're also hearing cases of people being forced onto these boats after they pay ransom in Libya. In other words, not necessarily Nigerians who wanted to leave Libya, who still wanted to wait things out and see if maybe the job situation would improve, but being snatched on the street by teenage gangs, held for ransom, and then once the ransom is paid, forced onto these boats to go to Italy, which is sensible from the criminal's point of view because they're less likely to have money to raise a second time for ransom. So putting them at large in the streets of Libya just means they might get kidnapped again and possibly killed. So I think all parties feel once you've paid, you're free to go. And so we're seeing migrants like that as well.
Looking ahead in the months coming, what do you see happening with migrants, especially those that are coming from sub-Saharan Africa?
Well, we know that the Horn of Africa, Eritrea, Sudan, Ethiopia, Somalia, those migrants tend to come through Libya later in the spring. We don't usually see them this early in the year. So we expect those numbers to increase. Beyond that, so much will always depend on underlying conditions in the home countries. And right now we're waiting for drastic changes in Syria, Ethiopia, with the drought, and Eritrea, the political situation, to sort of modulate how the migration flow goes.
Joel Millman is a spokesperson for the International Organization for Migration. He spoke with me from Geneva.
A Republic of Congo government spokesman says gunmen today attacked police, military, and municipal installations in the capital, Kinshasa. Reuters reports the spokesman has identified the gunmen as members of the so-called Ninja Militia that fought against the government forces in the 1997 civil war. Hundreds of residents fled their homes in the south of the city during the heavy gunfire. No injuries have been reported. The militia is opposed to President Denis Sassou Nguesso. There is also have been street protests against the government. The protests reportedly have been contained and are being investigated for possible links between the ninja militiamen and opposition candidates in last month's election. Mr. Sassou Nguesso won re-election on March 20th after asking for a constitutional change, allowing him to run for another term. He has ruled for 32 years.
South Africa's parliament is expected to debate an opposition motion tomorrow to impeach President Jacob Zuma. The Democratic Alliance Party is filing the motion following last week's constitutional court ruling against Mr. Zuma. The court said he violated the Constitution by not repaying the public for about $14 million in renovations at one of his private homes. The impeachment motion needs a two-thirds majority vote in Parliament to pass. However, for the ruling, African National Congress Party holds a large majority. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. About 200 migrants and refugees have been returned from Greece to Turkey today. Police in the Republic of Congo's capital exchanged heavy gunfire with unidentified gunmen in the first major outbreak of violence since the re-election of President Denis Sassou Nguesso. And South Africa's parliament is expected to debate an opposition motion tomorrow to impeach President Jacob Zuma. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Somalia's central government and officials from the semi-autonomous Puntland region have agreed that a clan-based formula for choosing leaders will be replaced by a one-person, one-vote system of voting. The change will occur after this year's elections. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi that could be a critical step to moving Somalia away from decades of political instability and conflict.
In a statement to the media, the Somali Prime Minister welcomed the agreement to reform the electoral process and move the country beyond the August 2016 election. The deal, if implemented, means Somalia's parliament and president will be chosen by one-person, one-vote system, beginning with elections in 2020. But Ali Adawi, a Somali politician based in Nairobi, says it may be hard to fulfill some of the agreements. He says a similar deal agreed to in 2012 involved changes to how people's representatives will be chosen. and that this latest agreement appears to contain several loopholes. For years, Somali governments have been constructed using the 4.5 formula, a system that gives equal representation to the country's four major clans and a smaller number of posts to so-called minor clans. Whether the formula is blame or not, the country has seen a string of unstable governments that failed to win popularity or exert much authority. Independent analyst Abdulwahab Sheikh Abdi Samad says achieving the one-person, one-vote process depends on the next government.
One man, one vote can work in Somalia. It depends everything, how the incoming government, how they work on it, how they recognize the ruling clans, how are they going to build the government institutions, how are they going to empower their electoral body, how are they going to build the capacity of Somalia's security apparatus.
Authorities in Puntland, one of the most stable parts of Somalia, said they're open to helping other regions and constituencies deal with security challenges when they hold elections. Still, many fear the political bickering, clan politics and the continued threat of Al-Shabaab militants may derail the electoral process and Somalia's future. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The U.S. Assistant Secretary for Democracy and Human Rights says that the human rights situation in Burundi remains extremely grave. He made the comment over the weekend after meeting with government officials in Bujumbura. Moses Javierimana reports from Bujumbura.
Burundi has been experiencing relatively calm nights after of almost a year of violence since protests erupted against President Pierre Nkurunziza. Nevertheless, Tom Malinowski said that there are still many violations of human rights in the country.
My message to the government was that the situation remains extremely grave in our view. There is no question that human rights abuses are continuing. We have seen continued detentions of people who are perceived as being sympathizers of the opposition. We have seen increasing reports of people being disappeared.
The Burundian government denounced reports of increased human rights violations. Last week, the National Independent Human Rights Commission addressed the Burundi parliament and reported one case of rape said to have happened in the strongholds of the opposition. Malinowski says the United States is watching how the government responds to reports of rights abuses.
We are focused not on what they say, but what they do. It is good that they make promises. Actions sometimes begin with promises, but the important thing is that they take the actions. For example, they have promised to allow 200 African Union monitors into this country. They have not yet signed the Memorandum of Understanding with the African Union that is needed to allow that to happen.
The Burundi government says it welcomes Friday's United Nations Security Council resolution to deploy up to 100 police in the country to study the current security situation. However, the government earlier this year had rejected the deployment of African Union peacekeepers and warned that it could be considered as an invasion. The United States Assistant Secretary of State said that the only way Burundi can overcome the crisis is through inclusive dialogue. He warned the Burundian government of continued hate speech by some officials.
Denouncing everybody, from the Catholic Church to civil society to the media to the opposition to foreign countries, as enemies of the people of Burundi is not going to get us to a successful dialogue. And it doesn't suggest sincerity on the part of the government. That kind of crazy, hateful speech needs to stop.
While attempts to have inclusive dialogue continue, residents say they are uncertain as to how long relatively calm capital will continue. Moses Javierimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Nigeria's army says it has arrested the leader of the Islamist militant group Ansaru, a faction of Boko Haram. Ansaru has been accused of kidnapping and killing Westerners. Brigadier General Rabe Abubakar says Khalid al-Banawi was arrested on Saturday in Lokoja, the capital of the central state of Kogi. He says the arrest came during the surrender of some Boko Haram fighters. The U.S. had offered a $5 million reward for al-Banawi in 2012. It named him as one of three Nigerians designated as global terrorist. Ansaru is based in the northeast of Nigeria and is believed to be aligned with al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb.
The U.S. today transferred two Libyan detainees from the Guantanamo Bay Detention Center to Senegal. It's part of the Obama administration's efforts to reduce the number of prisoners there and close the prison. The administration says the detention center's existence helps terror groups recruit members. The rights group Human Rights Watch says the transfer shows meaningful progress on closing the prison. It also says that the Senegalese government has shown leadership and compassion in agreeing to resettle the detainees. It also says that both of the detainees were held at Guantanamo for years in violation of international law. Both men were held for about 14 years.
Health officials in Liberia say a five-year-old boy has tested positive for Ebola just days after his mother died of the virus. A 30-year-old woman died of Ebola in Monrovia last week, months after Liberia was declared free of the virus. Her death followed a recent flare-up that took the lives of at least four people in neighboring Guinea. Deputy Health Minister Talbot Nyanzwa says the latest flare-up has been traced to Guinea, but he said unlike in the past, Liberia's health system has the capacity to deal with the flare-up.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Suleiman Terawali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the role of development partners in promoting democracy and good governance in Africa. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modu talks about autism, still an ailment with no known specific cause and no known cure yet. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
African Music Mix.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.